All right, one announcement. There will be no class Tuesday and Wednesday due to weather. We'll send out a text to everybody. We'll hopefully get back on track next week. We're in Revelation 18. We're at verse 17. I saw something interesting. It was on Tuesday's All Israel News. This relates to the general prophecy thing. In the year 1947, 1 year before the birth of Israel, there was a great archaeological find, discovery, quite by accident. A Bedouin boy threw a rock into a cave and heard pottery break. That's where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. One of the things that's so amazing about the Dead Sea Scrolls is they found the entire parchment. You know, they didn't have books. The entire parchment roll of the book of Isaiah. The whole thing intact in a jar. Now, why is that so important? Isaiah has a lot to say about the last days, of course, and about Israel in particular. So they got all these and all these other fragments. And in 1965, Israel built their archaeological museum. The top of it is shaped like the top of a lid on one of those jars. It goes up like this. Brenda and I were there, saw it. The Dead Sea Scroll, Book of Isaiah is in a special room. You know how many hundreds of years old that parchment is? Sitting there in those caves, in that dead, dry weather. You know, we pulled up there. I was going to walk up there. That's when I could walk. Crawl up there and see all that. And Brenda saw a sign that said, "Watch out for the scorpions." Oh, I don't know. But anyway, God's in control of all these details. That's providential that they would discover this. You know, and it debunked some of the liberal scholars who said, oh, the text has changed and it wasn't the same. It virtually is the same as the Hebrew Bibles today. There are a few grammatical little nothing stuff. Doesn't change any meaning, any substance. Because all this stuff through the time was handwritten by scribes. They had a system where they counted up letters. I mean, it's just... I thought, can you imagine doing that for a living? Whoa! Because they didn't have, obviously, they didn't have printing presses and things like that. That was a phenomenal innovation. Gutenberg's printing press. Because Catholics couldn't burn enough Bibles to keep them away from Christians. So the technology came along. So what do Catholics have to do? They had to come up with their own version, the Douay or something like that. With all their little corrupt stuff thrown in there. But they couldn't burn Bibles anymore because they couldn't keep up with it. What kind of a Christian organization burns Bibles? Them. Back in the day. Yeah, there are good translations and there's poor ones. You know, we went with the New American Standard 1997 version. They did one after it. And the one before it had a lot of King James, and they got rid of some of the King James Old English type these and thous. You know, the language, that they didn't have a holy language referring to God. It's you, him, and so forth. So they had this Elizabethan English that we got saddled with as in the Fundy Church. I was so glad that God blessed the guy that put together the New American Standard. Now, there are other versions of the Bible NIV, and others. They got their problems. And we, from the day, see, I don't have to sit here and mess with correcting the King James Version. Occasionally, I have to correct something here in the New American Standard. But it's infrequent compared to what you would have to do if you were trying to deal with the King James Version. Okay, what I want to do now is wrap this up, verses 17b through 19. Because the next last part of this chapter dealing with the U.S. and prophecy will be dealt with in a separate way, standing on its own, because no longer is God speaking from heaven. Something else develops right on the heels of this. We'll get to it, God willing, next Sunday. Verse 17b, and every shipmaster, that's a captain of a ship, and every passenger and sailor, and every captain. This only occurs twice. Kubernetes, here and in Acts 27:11. And every passenger. The word, just to get the word passenger in here, we have the article with the word for place, and we have a present participle of the verb pleo, to sail or travel by sea. So four words in the Greek equal one word in the in our translation, passenger and sailor. Well, we have nautica and so forth, nautes. I like the Greek language because so much of it is reflected in our language. That's one of the really great things Alexander the Great did. He spread the Greek language far and wide. It became the lingua franca of the Roman Empire. They might have defeated Greece and all of it, but they didn't defeat that language. Because God had a plan, and that plan was, this is one of the most technical and precise languages. God wanted it to be the language of the New Testament. Not something else. Koine Greek. Koine means common. What the average, everyday person spoke back then. And then there's classical Greek. We have a little bit of it in our Bible. We have it in Luke's introduction to his gospel. He was an intellectual, a doctor, a historian, blah, blah, blah. He was a real great asset to the Apostle Paul. He was a Gentile. Anyway. And as many as make their living by the sea stood at a distance. Can you imagine the workforce and everybody involved in shipping? Not just on the ships, loading them, running all this. It's a lot of employees in ancient times on down to modern times. And as many as make their living by the sea, and as many as, hosos, thalassa, sea, earn a living. The present participle, or God, Zomai, stood at a distance. This is nothing new to us. Stand, and then the word adverb, from a distance. And were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like the great city? And saying, crying out and saying, what, Krazo, cry out, seeing the kapnas, smoke of her perosis burning, saying, What? The interrogative pronoun tis, what? Like, homoios, adjective, the great polis, city. And they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying. And they were throwing, of course, dust upon their heads, kephale, and crying out, kradzo, weeping, klio, and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city, in which all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth. For in 1 hour she's been laid waste. Nothing ever has been seen like this before. Well, okay. Sodom and Gomorrah was wiped out in 1 hour. 1 day. But nothing on this scale. I mean, these were city-states down there, you know. And the rest of the world wasn't traumatized by having them wiped out. Life went on for people. They weren't all interconnected and interdependent like we have in our modern world. Okay, Ui, Ui, the great city in which all who had ships, they became rich, pluteo, aorist indicative. All who have ploion, means a vessel or a ship, in the sea, thalassa. Became rich. The noun here is timiotes, means valuable merchandise, costly things. Translate here, wealth. They could have put that in there, I suppose, but they didn't. were in ruined, the adjective 1 hour, laid waste, ero ma'o, present indicative. Okay. The balance of verse 18 introduces us to yet a third group of international mourners. The mariners, or merchant marine as they are called, who fly the flags of many countries. Two, this service industry will be devastated when America goes up in smoke. Again, we should see the logic in placing the destruction of America rather early on in the trib, since business worldwide will have to be shut down by the latter part of the trib, considering the nature of the trumpets and bowl judgments. The merchant marine will suffer massive layoffs when American-bound products stack up in foreign docks. Furthermore, it will not be safe to approach the coastline of the U.S. following this attack. Even if they wanted to, there's nobody here to receive it and pay for it and enjoy it. Six, the lament does not suit such cities as Rome or Babylon. Well, that's stupid, on the Euphrates. That's a big nothing. See, some people think that this whole area is going to be revived, and that's the Babylon of chapter 18. What dummies. It doesn't fit anything. This is not a country built on immigration. It is not a country in the midst of the seas. Well, its noteworthy geography is the Euphrates. It is to that area what the Mississippi is to the United States, or the Amazon is to South America, or the Nile is to Africa, and so forth. They are grabbing at straws. It's desperate because they don't want to face. It's sort of like, even Hal Lindsey was this way. Oh, I think America might just be a nothing country. He's in heaven and he knows better now. He did have one great thing going for him. He, unlike a lot of dummy fundies, said that Israel had to be a nation before we could even talk about the rapture. In his book, I don't like the name of it, but Late Great Planet. Every time I hear someone use that word, I cringe. It's not a friggin' planet. Pardon my language. But that's going to change. As I was talking to one of my members that's out there on remote listening, I said, that's going to change. This whole thing is going to break down. The whole damn network is going to collapse. And in the tribulation, it's back to the flat earth. I got proof. They're on earth talking about Jesus Christ, that he's coming. They're not saying, they're not running around this satanic antichrist. They're not running around saying, there's no Jesus. Read Psalm 2. Kings of the earth, they're fighting against the Lord and his anointed. They know about him and the promise of his coming just as sure as any enemy would know that these people are coming after him. So the lies of the cosmos, they covered all this up, brainwashed the hell out of us. In all the different ways they did it, it's all coming down around their ears. I am so happy that this will be exposed. Why did they have to have this? So they could deny God. Same reason they had to have evolution. Evolution is so stupid, it's beyond comprehension. All these species that are interdependent on each other and they just evolved. And they teach this crap with a straight face in schools. My son Jeff was telling me over here when she was in Putnam City, they had in the science one, the biology or whatever, they had this deal with the little apes going up. And it was after the class and the students were gone and he was in there and he pointed to the teacher and said, do you believe that? She had this shamefaced look and goes, and then I saw a comedian online. I guess some of these monkeys didn't make it. It was all funny. But it does. It pokes at this stuff. We're going to ridicule this stuff in the millennium. We're going to ridicule evil. If you're out there, I suggest you quit marching to the beat of the cosmos in so many different ways. It's going down. Yeah, it's going to fight back, but it ain't going to do it any good. You're going up against God and his son, Jesus Christ, and all the angels he can throw at people and all the other stuff. I don't care how many people don't believe a doctrine. I don't care. Let God be true and every man a liar. If nobody believed it and it was true, God is going to stand by it. He isn't out there dealing with statistics. Well, that's one of the things they said to me about around here. Well, how could so many people believe that? Just like they have all this other stuff through history. How could so many people believe in all these deities and running around and these advanced civilizations? How do they believe that? The same way you get little kids to believe that a fat man up in Alaska comes running down here in a sleigh and distributes toys. Every good and perfect gift comes from the Father in heaven. Not some made up Saint Nick. You can go back and study the history of that one too. There was a Nicholas guy that was helping out orphan kids and everything in Europe, and out of this came this whole thing. I forgot all the details. The Merchant Marine will suffer massive layoffs. That we got that. Furthermore, it will not be safe to approach the line. Oh, and another one. I throw out the different things that eliminate certain ones from consideration. The lament does not suit such cities as Rome or Babylon on the Euphrates, but rather it supports a nation that resides by many waters. That's us. Jeremiah 51:13. Atlantic, Pacific, and Gulf of Mexico. That qualifies many waters. I remember traveling out deep sea fishing off Key West back in the day with a couple members of my church, where the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico come together. The boat with its motor in the back, he placed it dead center. The water that was bright blue and the other that was a lighter blue color was completely separated from each other. It was weird. And you'd see the boat go down and two colors of water are shooting out of it. The Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico. A comparable ancient kingdom was Tyre. When it came under foreign attack, similar to lamenting, took place around the Med when Tyre was shut down. There's a parallel here. You can go read all about it in Isaiah 23:1 and following. When Tyre got shut down, there was throughout the Mediterranean and all that area where all their ships were running and carrying on. Tyre was also an economic international, controlling people from that island. Money talks. So it becomes kind of a frame of reference for the USA in the last days. Ancient Tyre. Until Alexander took it down. They were secure on their rock. They had big walls. No one can get to us. Alexander did. All these people that trust in their fortifications, trust in their weaponry. When it's time to go, it'll go. Imagine current prophecy students who believe we're living in the rapture generation. I said that should be who believe. We are living in the rapture generation who do not even consider the U.S. when approaching this chapter. That are the subject, at least, look, there may be a book out there in the library. There's stuff stuck around. I couldn't keep up with all of it. But there were some written that had it right. And one of my attendees way back before gave me this booklet, softback booklet, written by some guy out of some seminary up in, is the U.S. in prophecy? And that's what put me on to it. There are three categories of persons when considering seafarers. First, there is the ship's captain, as per the Greek noun, only here and in Acts 27:11. Next, there are passengers, presented here in a fairly elaborate idiom, everyone who sails to a place. Compare those sailing to the places down along Asia, Acts 27:2. The term, sailors, is a reference to those who make their living on board a ship, the merchant marine. The expression literally rendered is sailors, even as many as work at the sea. Like the national leaders, verse 10, and the merchants, verse 15, those who travel keep their distance from burning America as well for obvious reasons. If this were any other type of burning, people would come near to render assistance or see if there was an opportunity to profit. We know from the prophecies that people won't even be allowed to come in here after everything settles down and there is no nuclear danger. They can't even come in here and, out of curiosity, and go through the ruins. The only inhabitants in the ruins are animals. That will proliferate like mad. millennial animals, and the vegetation will just all be overgrown. And the animals will live in the ruins. They'll live in the mansions, in the businesses, in the malls, in the subdivisions. That's what they're going to do. I got that in the prophecies too. You can go read it for yourself, get the doctrine. It's always good to read Jeremiah 50 and read the Jeremiah chapters. The change in tense where the past tense occurs in verses 17-19, replacing the future tenses of verses 8 and 9 and the present tense of verse 11, is probably due to the animated nature of the description. Two times there is mention of the smoke of her burning, verses 9 and 18. The city's grandeur is once again a cause for awe. The immediate occasion of the dirge of the seafarers is their seeing the smoke of her burning. The columns of smoke taken high into the earth's atmosphere are literally seen around the world, causing deep emotional pain on a particular class of humanity. Like the implied answer to the question asked in Revelation 13:4, who is like the beast? The simple answer is no city. You might have a problem with it being called just a city, the United States. But we're all interconnected with cities from the East Coast to the West Coast. All the big cities, they're all connected like a grid. Chicago, go on and on and on and on. Clearly, those who do the lamenting and the reason for their lament signals that the entity destroyed is without peer when it comes to trafficking and products on the high seas. Those who make their living at sea are very distraught when they witness the total destruction of their principal client. 26. The community of mariners expressed their grief in the most demonstrative fashion of the three groups mentioned in this chapter. Casting dust on the head is an Old Testament act symbolizing grief, as per those verses from the Old Testament. This is what people did when the seafaring giant Tyre fell, Ezekiel 27:30. Along with this, they kept crying out, weeping and mourning, both present participles, like the merchants in verse 15. The double woe begins their lament in verses 10 and 16, and in a nominative absolute, the great city follows. They bewail the loss of the, quote, city, by which those who have ships at sea become rich. Babylon's economy is the basis for the livelihood of mariners around the world, and so they lament the loss of that livelihood. America's spending power and its sudden elimination from the world economy, just pull the plug, sends this class of laborer into extreme economic distress. It's hard to even imagine. It's all so interconnected. And now it's gone. What are you going to do with all this stuff now? The citizens of a particular country can't handle all of it. A big percentage of it was shipped to the U.S. The mariners express their distress in almost identical terms as that of the merchants in verses 17a. Both the merchants and the merchant marine bemoan the loss of markets. Instead, they should be concerned over their immortal souls. You're in the tribulation, fools. Figure this out. The party's over. We're headed to a new ball game. But this is what people are. They cling to their God. They cling to this thing. Not the Lord. Not His plan. And all of His promises. That He's going to take care of us. Through thick and thin. I've got His promises. He's going to house us, clothe us, protect us, and do what needs to be done. If a believer suddenly loses his or her job or the business goes under, are you to fall apart? No. Where do you want me to go now, Father? I need a job. But not the merchants of the earth. Instead, they should be concerned over their immortal souls, considering the days that are thrust upon them. And all they can do is run around and carry on because America's gone. Thank you, Father, for the opportunity. May God, the Holy Spirit, enlighten us in Christ's name.